Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the SaaS Sessions podcast. We are on the seventh season now. And today we have Samir Jahij on the show with us. Samir is currently the head of international growth strategy, operations, and sales engineering at Clari. Clari, for those of you who don't know, helps businesses stop revenue leak and drive revenue precision. Samir is also an LP at Stage 2 Capital. It's one of my favorite VC funds out there. So, hey, Samir, such a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
Thank you, Sunil, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. I gave a very short intro about you, Samir. So why don't you tell us more about yourself and then how's your journey been into the SaaS ecosystem?
Absolutely. My pleasure. So my name is Samir. And as you said, I'm currently at Clari, leading our international growth strategy, operations, and the sales engineering team. And the journey into SaaS has been a long one in the making. I've been in SaaS for 10 years, I think, by now. It's been a while. And I'm originally from Switzerland. That's where I studied, where I went to undergrad, and where I started my professional career at Accenture. This was my first role. I got exposed to SaaS there for the first time, working on global projects involving Salesforce. I was doing projects in Germany, in Switzerland, in the UK, in the US a little bit, and really found the profound impact that, you know, SaaS can have on businesses in digital transformation. Then a couple of years later, I moved to London and did a master's and worked a little bit in a startup with a friend, which was exciting, and moved to Salesforce directly because I was as impressed by the technology, and I found my role at Salesforce doing pre-sales. Mm-hmm. So I was a sales engineer there and working across EMEA as well, a lot in the UK of that work, and got deeper into SaaS, the business model, the technology. And eventually, after a few years, I want to do something a bit more entrepreneurial even, and joined as one of the very first employees to launch the EMEA business of Clari. And we've been on the mission ever since to bring Clari to people in EMEA. And that's where I've taken on additional roles in terms of expansion, operations, and then leading the team in sales engineering.
Great, great. Thank you for talking about your journey and also leaning on to, you know, discussing on what's the topic of this episode about expanding your SaaS globally, right? And you seem to be an expert on that. And Clari got hold of you and they said like, hey, Samir, like, why don't you help us expand in Europe and other markets, right? Like every company, every SaaS company wants to sell globally. Right? Like they initially start selling in their home ground. Maybe they're based in Europe, maybe they're based in UK, they're based in US, they're based in India. And most of the SaaS companies make most of their revenues who are based in India by selling into the US. And like, that's one, but then they also want to sell in Southeast Asia, in Europe, and like, you know, eventually like more markets, right? So in your experience, how do you go about choosing a market for expansion? Right? What are some of the factors that you look at when choosing the right market?
Yeah, I think it's such a fascinating question. I've become a bit of a startup building geek and SaaS geek over the years being at Clari. And such an important question for so many companies. You're right. The ones that start in the US or are early on in the US, it's such a big market. So there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. You know, people are very open to new solutions, and then you can really build a lot of initial traction in the US. And at some point, you have to look beyond that, right? Many companies, especially startups, you have to prove if you're a VC backed that you can be a big company, a global company, and you need to think about expansion. And that's what Clari did as well at sort of Series D. So just after Series D is when I joined. They had backing from Sequoia and others from A to the C series. And then Sapphire Ventures and some other VCs came in at the D round. And that's when we launched the EMEA office. And it's sort of a typical stage where people launch EMEA, so a sort of B, C, D stage. And for us, you know, London was the obvious choice, like it is for many companies. There's maybe two or three hubs that people think about when they want to come to Europe from the US. And this London is one, it's a big one. And Dublin is the other one. And there's sort of other new and emerging hubs like Amsterdam that are interesting. London and Dublin are, for obvious reasons, quite easy when you think about language. That's quite easy. When you think about talent pools, they're amazing places as well because you get a lot of talent, especially in Dublin. They've built massive talent over the last years with companies like Google and many other tech companies setting up shop there. And London is fantastic as well when you think about the universities, the talent, the economic size of London and then the UK more broadly. So that becomes a very obvious choice. And culturally, it's probably something that's quite close to the US as well, at least when you compare it to other countries in Europe like Germany or France, which will be quite a bit different from the US culturally and how you sell, how you set up things. So that's a natural move. And that was the move that Clary made around 3.5 years ago. Yeah, when I joined.
Awesome. And then once that is mostly deciding from setting up your business kind of perspective, but then what are some of the factors in which particularly talks about the revenue growth that you may see when you launch in UK versus the revenue growth that you may see when you launch, let's say in Germany or something like that.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
Are those also factors that would come in, right? So what would some of those factors be for the growth of the company in that particular region?
Absolutely. So it's interesting how people think about this. And I was just at the breakfast last week with VPs of EMEA from many SaaS companies in the US, from Snyk, from Greenhouse, Clary was there, a bunch of other companies as well. And we were discussing the different ways of how you then go deeper into Europe once you have that first base, be it Dublin, London, whatever the case is. And one was interesting where, to launch in a market, you don't have to open up an office in the market. So there's kind of two different notions. People always think, I only launch in the market if I have a physical office with people sitting there and selling in the market. That's not necessarily the same thing, right? And it's been like that for us as well. When you think about how Clary started, as I said, we were just the five of us, kind of a couple of months in 2020. And if we remember back to the dark times in 2020, it was, the pandemic broke. And for us, it was, we don't need an office and everybody is virtual. And we actually started selling to companies across the continent. And for us, the factor in why we were successful in selling Clary across the continent was the ICP, the ideal customer profile we were after. They were very open already from the start to work remotely. So a lot of tech companies that buy Clary, and they are already distributed teams. So we might sell to somebody sitting in Vienna, Austria, but their operations team maybe sits in Atlanta on the East Coast. Or we sell to a company in Barcelona, but their CFO and their CRO, Chief Revenue Officer, they sit in London. So it would already make sense for us, even just being in London, to sell virtually through Zoom and run the sales cycle like that. Now, that's worked for us and our ICP. It's very important for people who listen in this podcast to think about their product, their value proposition, and their buyers. How are they behaving? How are they buying? What kind of sales cycles are they typically used to? Because that will determine if you need to be closer to them physically with like an office and people on the ground speaking a local language, or if you can do a remote selling motion. So it's really important to understand the buyers and buyer behaviors and how they think about buying software. And what your ICP is. So for us, it worked really well from the start, kind of stick to a remote selling motion and only travel occasionally when needed. And that's sort of a key thing to kind of think about when you think about selling into different markets early on.
Got it. That's a very good perspective that you bring. Like, you don't need to be physically present in some market to expand into that market. But let's say now you have decided, like you have your GTM plans laid out and you have decided that, okay, like, this is the market in Europe or let's say Middle East or any market globally that you want to tap into. And now you set up some operations, maybe locally or maybe remotely. And like, you're all ready to capture that. So what are some of the delaying factors that you have seen generally occur when you are trying to expand into that market? Maybe it's localization, maybe it's some regulation, maybe it's some competition in the local region, right? So what are some of those kind of factors?
There's all of it, all of the things you've mentioned. It's very exciting. And I can dive into each of those because you're absolutely right. You're hitting the nail on the head. This is what you need to look at. So yes, ICP, defining territories, understanding where your accounts sit, using RevOps capabilities to understand where's the opportunity, where do we have most of ICP to go after. Then I think as you start building your base, so let's say you start in the UK, you build a few, a bit of traction in the UK, get a few customers, that's great. And then the next question is, where do you have signals? Like, be really data-driven around your approach. Where do you have signals, be it, top of funnel, you see feedback coming in, you see demo requests, whatever your measurement is, you see that from Paris, Berlin, Munich, Zurich, wherever it is. And you start to understand, where is the next lighthouse customer I'm going to build and build around them? And at the beginning, you will not open up an office straight away and invest heavily in terms of cost, but you will probably travel and maybe set up a breakfast or evening event or start sponsoring something locally to explore the market more. It's what I've done when I travel to Germany for an event. I travel to other places, kind of try and get a feel for the tech community, the SaaS community of our ICP in the region, and try and understand, do we need to be physically present here to sell? Do we just need to market here? And get a bit of an assessment of the situation. And that's, I think, how you should approach it. It's I think in startup land, it's easy to build amazing fancy plans. And you know, like this famous quote goes, plan is only as good until you get punched in the mouth, and then you know, you throw the plan out the window. And so it's good to not over plan, but really just follow the signals, follow the data, understand your customer really deeply, and start building that motion. Because we went from, you know, I think 3 or so customers, we opened up the office, and was maybe, you know, 15, 20 customers in the first year, not even that many, right? But now it's hundreds, and it's in, I think, 16 countries the last time I've counted. And it was always, oh, Germany, that's interesting. We got one customer, and then they move on to a different company, and we track the champions, and we track the people who are moving to different companies, and we go back to them and say, hey, you know, you used Clary before, and you had really good experience with, you know, scaling your revenue engine and you know, improving the company. How about you use Clary again in this new company? Like, oh, yeah, that's fantastic. It's a good experience. So you build your lighthouse customers and champions. And that's really helped us ignite momentum. But it takes time. It takes, you know, the first year was all about those lighthouse customers. And I really mean also people within the accounts that you follow and help. And it's great to build a big plan and then think about, you know, hundreds of customers and all the many countries you want to launch in. But at the beginning, you just have to be extremely data-driven and look at the detail to understand who is our champions and, you know, where are they moving, how do we cultivate that, and then over time you'll gain more momentum and have to get a bit more organized and machine-like around it.
That's a really great insights. And so I want to understand, like, when you joined, like you mentioned, Clary had just raised Series D, and I believe, like, most of the reason of the Series D was also, I'm assuming, like, expanding to different markets and, you know, thinking about M&A, because I also know, like, Clary acquired Wingman, which is based in India, and Shruti, who was the CEO of Wingman, was also been on the show in
previous, she's great season. yeah
so VCs obviously help in this expansion. So what, like, you know, what sort of help do VCs generally provide, and what sort of help should founders generally expect from VCs when they're raising, and especially raising to, you know, expanding to new markets?
Amazing. Very good. And I realized I did not answer your other question about localization and competition. We'll talk about that later on as well. But first, the VCs. I mean, the VCs are fantastic. I think Clary is very fortunate with Sapphire Ventures, you know, Sequoia, Blackstone, and are kind of backing us. And it's been fantastic because a lot of the VCs that we work with, they have local representatives here as well in London. And they have, you know, people there in roles like business development or portfolio operations, you know, titles vary. But their goal is to help the companies scale better. And some of them do this in London. And they connect us with others in similar shoes like us, with partners of ours. So Clary is a partner of Sixth Sense, partner of other companies in that space. And we talk with them like, hey, how did you expand here? How was your strategy? Where do you see the signals? Because we're both selling tech. One is maybe a bit more marketing intent, and another is more revenue operations. Then you talk to somebody more on the enablement side, like Highspot, and you ask them for advice. And the VCs do help connect the dots for us and help us build those relationships, because, you know, you don't need to make a mistake twice if you can learn it from somebody in very similar positions like you are. So we have a very tight community with other SaaS vendors in London or in Dublin expanding into Europe. And the fun thing about this is, compared to the company's headquarters in the US, we're all the startups within the startups, because we're just, you know, 5-10 people. Clary, you know, and Clary was, I think when I joined, was about 220 people. Now it's, I think, 700. So we're like the startup within the startup. And we can sometimes move even faster out in the expansion market because we just get to get stuff done a bit more quickly. And that's really fun as well, working closely with them. And the VCs do unlock these relationships for us. They make intros as well to portfolio companies that might be headquartered here. And yeah, I'm really appreciative of the VCs, how they support us on our journey here.
Nice, nice. And I was reading a playbook by Index Ventures. So I think predominantly famous in Europe, and they help like European startups go into the US, and they have a very good playbook with great examples of, let's say, Zendesk and Typeform are great SaaS companies who Spendesk as well, like started out in Europe and then expanded to US as a win. So coming back to the previous one, like talking about localization and competition, right? Like, so what are some of these factors in these two particular swim lanes that might affect or that might cause delays when it comes to, market expansion?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think localization, I'll talk about first of translation localization. It's very important to differentiate the two. I mean, you just can't translate your SaaS UI and think, great, it's going to work in Germany just the same way, or France. It's probably not. And people have to make sure not to underestimate the task of localizing software. I think even companies like Salesforce past IPO did localization properly into different languages. And if you don't have to go that route, don't, right? Again, listen to your buyer, understand them. Of course, if you're selling to small manufacturing companies in Germany and they speak German all the time, everything they look at is in German all the time, you probably have to think about translation and localization earlier. If, however, you're selling, like Clary does, again, a revenue operations platform that is helping people run revenue more effectively across the globe, English will probably do. And it's been the case for us. So it's very important to kind of understand that nuance in your buyers and adhere to that. On the competition side, that's a fun one. I love competition. It's always good. And competition is interesting where, again, when you're thinking about competition, there's different levels. You have a big tech you're competing against or small ankle biters, earlier stage startups. And there's always a different dynamic in those different companies. What is interesting is when you're coming in as a new player is make your first customers really successful. I think we talked about the Lighthouse customers. I still am in touch with some of the very first people we worked with, that we partnered with, and they've been successful for years now. We just ran an event yesterday with our CEO in London with a room full of people, and we had C-suite there, we had SVPs there, and they just loved the solution. And they were some of the Clary users that have been with us for the whole journey since we launched in Europe. And nice. It's nice to see that kind of played back into the audience, and they see the value in how they can master their time to revenue and run their teams. And it's really effective, right? That really helps create a brand. And 3 years ago, we might have had the chance to fill a room with 10 people, and that's a nice dinner, and it's good. It's like early advocates. And yesterday we had, like, I think almost 100 there. And nice. That was impressive to see that. And that's through advocacy. Of course, marketing plays a role and other things as well, but it's a deep advocacy that helps spread that. So that's great. And more than on the tactical side, as I'm thinking about how do you differentiate as an expanding startup into Europe out of the US, you have to support your customers, not just in when you sell and show a great demo, do an amazing value assessment and POC, whatever the case is. But you really have to be there for them throughout the journey. We all know SaaS is a recurring business. It's recurring revenue you want to get every year, every few years. And for us, it was important from the start to have strong customer support, strong implementation, strong customer success to help them realize value so that they renew and become happy customers over a longer time. And not every company can offer that, because if you're on the West Coast in the US with a small team and you win a customer in Germany, or Munich, let's say, it will be very hard for you to support them with the time zone gap, also a bit of a cultural gap probably. And that's something we've addressed very early on to ensure we drive customer success with our early customers. And it's helped us really differentiate against many of the competitors that try to kind of get into our space as well.
Getting personal, like, and giving that personal touch and feeling to the customers, right? Like, as you said, like, it's a subscription model. You want them to stay with you the next year as well, and the following year and the following year for forever as you grow and you help them, them grow as well. So yeah, like, it's a great way to differentiate for sure. Giving a great experience always goes a long way, right? So can you give a specific example of a market entry, right, or an expansion initiative that you led at Clary that encountered, unexpected obstacles, right? Like, maybe not localization, maybe not competition, maybe not regulation, but something that, you know, you didn't account for, you didn't anticipate, and came to you as a, you know, surprise? And then how did you overcome it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like surprises so much, contrary to many people. So I try to anticipate as many of the things as I can as we kind of start and build our business since 2020. And one thing that I knew, there's two things that I knew from early on. One is privacy. People are very concerned about privacy and data protection in Europe, and I think it's top of mind for pretty much every company expanding into Europe. And you know, we struggled a little bit at the start because, you know, there was a lot of changes in regulation for the, you know, chief security officers listening, you know, with the privacy shield being invalidated and, you know, kind of a standard contract clauses being added to contracts. There was a lot of motion. And I think what we had to start to account for more in sales cycles, because it would take longer to sell, it would take more sales engineering power to convince and to explain, was the security aspects. Whereas in the US, it was always kind of, oh yeah, we reviewed your documents, SOC 2, ISO, pen tests are done. Good, Clary, you know, you can connect, fantastic. And here's more, what is this about? What data do you have? Why do you capture activities? Why do you record the calls? As you mentioned, we bought Wingman for conversational intelligence. So why do you want to record us? What happens with recording? And that's been interesting. So our teams here have become really experts as well in addressing these points and concerns, which are valid concerns. And that was something that maybe was not expected from our US leadership as obviously, but us coming in locally and knowing that me being from Switzerland as well helped, kind of because I was in the local market, I was like, I knew this would be important. And that's when we stepped up our security a bit, added more documentation, also just explainers, not just more certifications, but here, like, here's an explanation of why we capture activity, so we can know if the sales rep has a next meeting and you can help coach them to get a next meeting to improve your sales. All these sorts of things helped. I think that was one thing, the privacy, security, consciousness in the market that was maybe a bit unexpected or not assessed as importantly. And then there's other things like, you know, what we've started in the product prioritizing more is improving Wingman and the transcription around it, because you start transcribing not just English, you start transcribing 15, 20, 30 languages. And I think Wingman now supports, I don't know, there was a number the other day, like over 100 languages even that it can transcribe, which is really impressive. And we've started prioritizing that product kind of development as well. And that's where a local person or a person who's based locally, like me and then the others, help, because you listen to the local market, you are in the deals, but you also have a close connection to HQ, which I think is another really important learning for people listening. You're not just a sales team out there somewhere with the HQ in California. It's not that you say, if you're saying something like, if you're a founder in California, and in Palo Alto or something like that, and you say, oh, I'll open up Chicago, I'll open up New York, and I'll open up London. And you say that in the same sentence, it will go wrong, because it's very different to open up in London, kind of trying to expand into Europe, than to open up one more US sales office. It's culturally very different. There's different nuances in the market. And you have to have people in those expansion markets build close ties to leaders in the US. Product is one of them. So that's where I was able to talk to product very directly at the senior levels to say, look, if we want to expand successfully here, we'll need to support different languages. Again, the security aspect was important and other things. So that's an important learning, hopefully, as well for listeners as they're thinking about expanding into Europe.
Great, great. So many insights. This has been a great conversation. And like I would want to shift gears and move on to the lightning round. So I'm going to ask you like three questions and you have to answer with whatever is on top of your mind. So yeah, the first one, like, what's the number one thing that has helped you shorten your learning curve?
The number one thing that shortened my learning curve, I think, is move from reading to listening. I love listening audiobooks and podcasts now. I can't get the time to read, especially with a toddler at home. So that's helped me learn faster. Yeah, listening to audiobooks and podcasts at 1.5x usually.
Yeah, that's what I do as well. On to the second one then. So what's the one fundamental change that you're making in your job in this year?
One fundamental change this year, I think, as we're scaling and growing, is, you know, delegating more as well, because we have to invest more time in thinking forward. So we scaled the team they are gaining experience. They start really to be absolutely independent across all functions as well, which is exciting. So as a leadership team, we'll have to look more forward, like this new economy, the next stage of our growth. And that's probably going to be a bit of a shift, right? Move from tactical in the deals, in the business, to thinking forward. I think that's the next step for us.
Nice. And then on to the last one. So what do you know about your work now that you wish you would have known when you first started?
Oh, I wish I first started. Well, I knew it would be exciting. I knew it would be hard. And I wish, okay, I'll say this. I wish I knew earlier how much I'd learn and grow in startup land. And then this goes for any startup, I guess. But it's, I would have probably made the jump even earlier into startup land. I mean, I was a kind of Accenture and then Salesforce, but the amount of learning you go through in just a week, a month, a quarter, doesn't compare to anything I've had before. And at Clary, especially when we deal with chief revenue officers and C-suite, help them run revenue in companies and improve their businesses. Mm-hmm. It's just fantastic. So I think that the amount of growth is amazing. And if I had told myself that a couple of years earlier, I'd be, why am I not doing this today? Why wait another year? And that's been very exciting for me and a great journey.
Same. I think the same as well. Like, that's why I always like worked into startups, and I try to find, like, you know, zero to one, the most exciting and the most challenging. And in a way, like, you were in a zero to one at Clary as well, when they just launched in Europe. And as you said, like, you know, startup within a startup. So that's definitely like a, you know, great role and great responsibility to have, an exciting one.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
Awesome. So thanks a lot, Samir. That marks the end of the episode. And thanks a lot for sharing all these great insights for, you know, for any SaaS company or any founder or anybody who's listening there, just expanding into different market stuff. But I think listening to your insights and your experience would help them ease the process and, you know, have some questions cleared in their mind.
Wonderful. It was a pleasure being here, Sunil. And if anybody wants to reach out, you can always find me on LinkedIn, and happy to connect as well. Thank you for having me.